The peer and the preliminaries also set something called the normative date, which is a kind of an odd legal construct. But the idea was the point at which they would draw the line for where Catholic worship would be allowed and where it would not be, and where Protestant worship would be allowed. What the peer and the preliminaries did was to say that the situation in November of 1627 will be frozen. That is to say, the Catholic gains which had been made in the south and the southwest of Germany by the year 1627 would be retained by the Catholics, but the lands of the German Protestant princes in northern Germany would be safeguarded, and all the territories, including church lands which they had secularized there since the 16th century, not reclaimed by the Catholics, would be kept as well. The Edict of Restitution itself was declared to be suspended for 40 years, and during this period, a bi-confessional body, composed equally of Protestants and Catholics, was to be appointed to work out a definitive settlement. And if this failed, there was a backup measure. Provisions were made to extend the time period and allow appeals to imperial courts. What's crucial is that both sides renounced the resort to force. That is to say, the emperor finally gave up his own claim to enforce his own decision of the religious settlement. Having hammered together this draft arrangement at the end of 1634, in early 1635, the emperor put the proposals of the Pirna preliminaries to a panel of 24 theologians to see if they would approve them, and thereafter to a group of his 8 closest advisors, 4 of whom were priests and 4 of whom were lay people. Ferdinand's confessor Lamormaini was on both panels, and unsurprisingly, Lamormaini argued that the victory of Nördlingen was a sign of God's favor, and that God would allow Ferdinand II to prevail. Lamormaini argued, in other words, against any kind of compromise with the Protestants in the matter of religion. What is striking is that Lamormaini's view, no compromise, you know, we must revoke all concessions to the Protestants, or at least as many as possible, this was the view which had prevailed. It animated the Edict of Restitution, and it had prevailed at the meeting in Regensburg in 1630. The emperor's panels by 1635 now rejected them. Lamormaini was completely in the minority. Most of the emperor's advisors, both lay people and priests, argued that imperial policy simply couldn't be based on anticipated miracles anymore. It had to be determined rationally. Of course, everyone assured the emperor, your cause is just, but who are we to understand God? God's judgments are inscrutable. Even those who fight in holy causes sometimes encounter misfortune. And one theologian made the interesting argument that it was presumptuous. It was presumptuous of human beings to rely on divine assistance to bring victory, and that this last chance at peace had to be taken. Lamormaini was accordingly overruled, and on the 30th of May, 1635, a final agreement, known as the Peace of Prague, was signed. Amnesties were promised to everyone who had fought against the emperor, with 2 key exceptions. The Bohemian rebels got no amnesties, and the family of Frederick V of the Palatinate, Frederick V himself having died in the year 1632, but his descendants continued the struggle, the Palatine ruling family was excluded from the amnesty. Maximilian of Bavaria was granted the Upper Palatinate and the electoral title in perpetuity, and Calvinism remained proscribed. What is interesting about the Peace of Prague is how popular it was in Germany. It was proclaimed to general rejoicing, the Heilbronn League promptly collapsed, and all of the major German princes signed the accord. After 1635, the Habsburgs had no significant German enemies. There were only 2 minor German territories, which remained allied with Sweden. The accord represents, it seems to me, a major gain for the Catholics, for the Habsburgs, but also for Saxony as well. It preserved, crucially, a federal vision of the Holy Roman Empire, not an absolutist vision. Unfortunately for the Germans, however, the Peace of Prague had a crucial flaw. It neglected to address the demands of 2 men, both of whom had every intention of continuing the war, and both of whom also had the power to do so as well, Cardinal Richelieu of France and Axel Oxenstierna of Sweden. And on the 19th of May, 1635, France now finally declared open war on Spain. To review then, what we see happening during the first half of the 1630s is that German history is redolent with a kind of bitter irony. After 6 years of fighting, from the Edict of Restitution in 1629 to the Peace of Prague in 1635, the emperor has finally been convinced that he had overreached himself. The German states were finally able to resolve their differences and make peace among themselves. Unfortunately, however, by this point they had already invoked a whole series of demons who were now beyond their control and who were going to move the war to an even more destructive phase in the years that followed.